From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. And we're back after a week-long hiatus to Havana, Cuba.
In nombre de nuestro pueblo,
in name of our country,
del partido,
of the party,
estado,
of the state,
el gobierno,
of the government,
los familiares,
and the relatives,
reitero el agradecimiento
I will say once again, thank you all for the endless,
respeto a Fidel,
for the endless words of respect and love.
Y su obra.
To his ideals and actions that keep coming from all over the world.
That was Cuba's president, Raul Castro, last Saturday evening, speaking to a massive crowd at the Revolution Square in Santiago de Cuba, as heads of state and other foreign dignitaries from around the world paid last respects to the leader of the Cuban Revolution, Fidel Castro. The translation was by China's news agency, CCTV. We'll have more on that next week, but today we speak with Margaret Kimberly, columnist at blackagendareport.com, about this week's piece, Black Fear in the Age of Trump.
Yes, this ever since Election Day, black people in this country have been in a state of shock, confusion, and mostly fear. I think Clinton's anticipated victory, first of all, that took him by surprise, and many people, including me, that Trump won. But there's always extra anxiety for black people when there's a Republican victory. We cling so fiercely to the Democratic Party. And when Democrats lose, we feel as though we are out completely. Now, politically, the Democratic Party is out of the White House, of both houses of Congress, of most state legislatures.
Right.
But instead of questioning the Democratic Party and how it ended up in this situation, there is this terrible fear because Trump is seen as the Republicans are the white people's party, and Trump was seen as being the white candidate. It's interesting. His comments during the campaign were not directed at black people specifically, but the comments about immigration, about building a wall, about Muslims. He went back and forth about some sort of Muslim registry, calling Mexicans immigrants, murderers and rapists and so on. All of these things resonated with black people. And given our history, that makes sense.
Of course.
But the reaction of fear and I would just say powerlessness, of impotence, this idea that black people are totally at the mercy of the electoral system only, that we have no other options, that first of all, the problem of being so closely tied to the Democratic Party and what passes for leadership being so closely tied to the Democratic Party means that we believe it's almost as if we stop existing or something if a Democrat loses, and especially someone like Trump, who is such a divisive figure, and the people around him, some of whom who are white supremacists, there's no other way to describe them. The combination of all these factors has just created this huge amount of fear. And I'm not going to say that people like these alt-right characters are not a cause for concern. They always are. But black people are always at the mercy of white racism and white supremacy, always. And we need to see this as part of a continuum instead of as something that has been dropped upon us that we have never experienced before. And this also should be an opportunity to question the Democratic Party and why it ended up this way and why we see them as like a drink of water in the desert, and there's no other option except to be so closely linked to a party which is clearly, among other things, incompetent and couldn't win an election it should have won.
Yeah, I mean, you say in the article, having a black Democrat, okay, it's not just the white person's president or the white candidate in the White House, having a black Democrat in the presidency hit a multitude of sins. And you recite what happened over the Obama administration's 8 years as a group. We've lost jobs, the little wealth we had, and literally our lives and freedom from the police state. And that this has been true already. So, you know, what's changed?
Yes, and exactly. There's a difference in perception when we feel as though we have some kind of protection if there's a Democratic president. But what we have done to ourselves over the years in supporting Democrats has been terrible. I mean, if you look at Bill Clinton and the things he did to black people specifically, the crime bill, the anti-drug legislation, the mass incarceration that began under the guise of doing something about drug dealing, the 60-year right of public assistance, all of these things, and still we convinced ourselves that the Republicans couldn't be any worse and that our only option was to support him, that we have to silence ourselves, to censor ourselves, to keep Democrats in office. And so that continues with Obama. So he doesn't undo any of the things that Bush did. He didn't end he could have very easily released many of those people from prison. He did not. He made deals for austerity with Republicans. He destroyed Libya. And, you know, it's interesting, if nobody defended Gaddafi, if nobody defended Libya, black people did. But then he was in Obama's crosshairs, and so no one said anything. So we have defended things we used to condemn and condemned things we used to support, and the end result is nothing. We have ended up with nothing politically, and we need to have a serious conversation about our support for Democrats and why we think, even if you're going to support them, I'm finally finished with the Democratic Party, even if you think that you must support them, why does that mean being this unquestioning devotion? And part of that lies with the black misleadership class, as we call them at Black Agenda Report, the politicians, the leaders of the corporate-funded civil rights organizations, are all, even churches, everyone is linked to the Democrats. And none of them ever, they owe their position and their income to being loyal Democrats. So they pass for our leadership, and we follow, unfortunately, in lockstep with them. So I think this is an opportunity to reassess many things. It'll be very difficult, but it'll be very difficult for black people, for example, to question their loyalty to Obama. And I don't think that's going to be possible to even begin until he's really out of office, until at least January 20th. But we don't have to be in this situation. We don't have to see ourselves as being powerless because the Democrats lose an election. You know, in the civil rights movement, so-called the liberation movement, as I prefer to call it, that started in the 60s, black people had nothing. There were no, discrimination was perfectly legal. Segregation was legal. We had no friends. We had, half of us couldn't even vote because we lived in the segregated South. And we accomplished so much, despite being on the outs, so to speak, of every institution. No money, no friends in high places, none of the things we now think we have to have in order to effect change. And here we are 50 years later, quaking in our boots as if the sky has fallen because Donald Trump is president.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you bring up Libya in the context of that argument. Most Americans don't know, white, black, whatever, the actual role that Libya played in politics in Africa in the attempt to forge unity among various nations in Africa, and the role particularly the Gaddafi played in helping to fund projects that would further that development, and also things like support for the anti-apartheid forces in South Africa, and a number of other, many other things like that. So very few voices, even among the prominent members of the black community in the United States, standing up to Obama on behalf of Gaddafi as he was, as Libya was being bombed for 8.5 months on a daily basis, and then ultimately he was raped and killed. One notable exception being Louis Farrakhan. Now we have for this, the public display, the mea culpa of the Democratic Party as they attempt to reform. There's an attempt to push Keith Ellison forward as a champion of the insurgent left or progressives or whatever. And one of the first things he does, of course, is cut Louis Farrakhan loose, as they're trying to paint him as being, a bow-tied follower of Farrakhan. This is the kind of thing that we've seen happen over and over, not just among members of the black community, labor, and across the board. It leaves people that are insurgents in the party completely disarmed because their champions at the outset are chosen for them.
Exactly. Well, we have to, pick leaders outside of the electoral process. That was something we used to do, and it was very successful. We have to practice self-determination and political independence, because the Keith Ellisons of the world, of course, he's an ambitious guy. He could be head of the DNC, so of course Farrakhan goes under the bus. Of course he voted along with the rest of Congress to support Israel's war crimes in Gaza. So he's not going to be a champion of the left either. To say that the DNC was so disgraced, it's, damning with faint praise to say he, could be better than any of the other characters they had in there.
Right.
But we can't get out of this the debacle the Democrats created for themselves when they finally lost the one thing they had, the presidency. We can't compound this defeat by promoting people like him. I don't really care who runs the DNC, to be perfectly honest.
Right,
what I care more about is that black people see the power that we have, the power we could have, the power we could resurrect, should we choose to reform a mass movement. But there's so much confusion now, I'm not even sure how many people know how to do that. I mean, there's still people around who are active in the day, but Black Lives Matter shows part of the way. I have some issues with them, but it has to be something like that. It has to be independent of the Democratic Party. And it's important to be critical of the Democratic Party. I have been saying, that night, election night, I started writing my column, which I had to, it was like the line in the movie, get me rewrite. I was trying to rewrite, and it was clear that Trump was going to win. But
a lot of people were doing that, by the way. A lot.
Yes, I was up half the night. But anyway, and I believe I called it Dump the Democrats. And it's clear the reaction to Hillary Clinton's loss should have been mass revulsion, should have been an uprising against the Democratic Party. And but apparently black people are not the only ones in this situation, that progressives see the Democrats as like a life raft. And the Democrats have obviously done a good job of marketing themselves as a party of inclusivity and diversity. And when they don't really have that much to show for themselves, I mean, aside from saying that they'll have federal judicial appointments that are better, I can't really think of a lot else that they do that will be better. We had a Secretary of Education who promoted charter schools, so there's no reason to be afraid of Trump's
Arnie.
Nominee.
Yeah, right.
We've had the so-called climate agreement is a sham. It actually allows the world's temperature to rise.
Right.
It doesn't go into effect until 2020. The rich countries can, belch out carbon for the next 4 years. So if Trump gets rid of it, it's not that big of a loss, actually.
Right.
So, but people don't want to hear anything bad about the Democratic Party. It creates too much cognitive dissonance, I think. So, this idea that all is lost if Republicans are in, and yes, we're saved if Democrats are in, is a prevalent one. And worst still is the idea that in order for Democrats to win, we have to be quiet. We can't tell them what we want them to do. We can't tell them to stop doing something or start doing something, because the only way they can get into office is for us to be quiet and let them do what they want. And even now, after this ignominious defeat, that still seems to be the case.
Yeah, you wrote, actually, you invoked the civil rights or human rights or liberation movement earlier, just now. But you symbolize what needs to be done now by invoking it in the article, saying sometimes we voted with our feet away from the Jim Crow South, and you could plug in Democratic Party there, and at other times we rose up in open rebellion. We did not allow fear to rule the day.
Yeah, and now, 50 years after we did these heroic deeds, now we are cowering in fear, and there are people talking about, buying guns, and you can own a gun if you want. I'm frankly a little nervous about people who were never interested before suddenly having a gun. More afraid that they'll accidentally shoot me than shoot some racist redneck. But this reaction that there's nothing to hold back the barbarians. Democrats held the barbarians at the gate, and because Trump is elected, we're now suddenly in more danger. Well, I suppose things can always get worse, but let's just be clear about what our situation was like. A black person was shot and killed, or not just shot, but killed by the police in some way every single day. And that happened during the Obama administration. They did not prosecute any of those police. I don't see how we're more endangered because Trump is in office. He didn't free people from prison who were given those draconian sentences. So the reality is, yes, there are going to be policies that we don't like because we are Democrats. It's a Republican administration. There will be policies we don't like. But now every hate crime is blamed on Trump. I don't know if it's true that there has been an increase. I don't know who was keeping track before Election Day and how you count those numbers.
Yeah.
But there was a story in the yesterday, a football player with the New York Giants, someone vandalized his home and tagged racial slurs and the word Trump on a wall. Mm-hmm. And now, would those people not have done that if Trump hadn't won? It's, it's hard to say. But we should always be concerned about that undercurrent, and it's not too far below the surface of white supremacy. But I don't think the response has to be that we are doomed and that we are fearful and that we have no other leverage. We have no other means of protecting ourselves other than getting Democrats into office. I think this is as I said, this is going to be a very difficult, it should be a time of difficult introspection instead of just, isn't it terrible that Hillary Clinton lost?
Yeah. You mentioned in the article that there's a false choice, essentially, that shouldn't be swallowed, that you either have to give Trump a chance or, look at Armageddon is unfolding in front of us, and that it was desire for self-determination and the actions that followed from that that brought people out of slavery and out of Jim Crow, and that is what is needed now. Again, back to building a movement instead of trying to find some figurehead to, take on Trump and, I don't know, as a proxy for Clinton, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, and you know, it's just interesting. It's like we forgot everything we've done. As if we never did these things, and that people did not literally flee from slavery and force the issue. You know, Lincoln didn't care about slavery, but when people in mass ran for the Union lines and joined the Union Army, those were heroic deeds. And for us, their descendants, to say, you know, we're doomed because Hillary Clinton didn't win, and we have no other recourse but to put do-nothing or do-little Democrats in office, is just this mass amnesia is striking. It's why I wrote the piece. And, you know, there are people now doing heroic deeds, and that's one of the reasons we have Black Agenda Report, people who fight mass incarceration and police murder and various forms of discrimination, who speak out about the rest of the world and have international solidarity with people in other countries. And I think it's important for us. Having Obama in office created so much confusion. You know, saying nothing when he murdered Gaddafi was not the only thing that that we allowed ourselves to do. Last weekend, I went to the Cuban mission in New York. I and several hundred other people, there was a line around the block to give condolences on the passing of Fidel Castro. And that people like him should be our heroes. And we should see the connections between what the United States does to the rest of the world and what it does to us under Democratic presidents, and how we suffer and are oppressed. And just to have people like Fidel Castro in mind, to remind ourselves that everybody doesn't have to bow down. He paid a price. Cuba has paid a price, still with sanctions and that the United States has imposed on their country, but they have succeeded. And we can succeed by standing up for ourselves and not thinking that people who didn't do that much for us are our saviors. We are our own saviors, and we should be talking about what we can do. We'll have an attorney general who's named not only a Southerner, but is named Jefferson, after Jefferson Davis and right. Beauregard, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. And so, but that doesn't mean doom and gloom for us. How are we going to fight back against whatever it is that Jefferson Beauregard Sessions does as Attorney General? And so that should be what we're doing now. We should be planning how we are going to practice self-determination, and that should continue no matter who the president is and no matter which party is in the White House.
I mean, again, looking at history in this country and elsewhere, the change really comes from the bottom when you have fundamental change, and that means
exactly.
Organizing and raising demands. And, you know, whatever Trump proposes does not have to be the focal point of, well, we're in favor of this or we're against it, and that's the entire agenda. Rather, these are the things we want, and this is what you have to do and organize to force that.
Exactly. And I think there's such a... we're out of practice, frankly, in doing things like that. So it's gonna take a while for people to remember. Wait a minute, we know how to do this. We've done this before. We can speak out. So I think the shaking off the lethargy created by two terms of Obama is going to be difficult, but it certainly can be done, and it has to be done. You know, can't be panic. Every time he announces an appointment, there's this panic. This person is horrible for this reason. This person is horrible for that reason. And I told a friend of mine, I said, listen, we're not going to like anybody he picks. So there's no point in, you know, torturing yourself like watching a horror movie, as I believe I wrote in the column,
cool.
Where people pay to scare themselves.
Right.
I said it does not have to be like that. No, you're not going to like anybody that a Republican appoints. Any Supreme Court, that one Supreme Court position that the Republicans shrewdly refused to confirm. And now Trump will get to pick that person. Whoever it is will be somebody I don't like. You know, I don't know if it'll be Rudy Giuliani or whoever it's going to be. But that's also not a reason to live in fear either. We do have power. We've always had power. We keep talking about how America is a democracy. So let's suck it up and remember that. And get busy in finding out, determining how we are going to counter whatever comes out of this administration and counter whatever comes out when a Democrat is next in office, because this is not the end of the world. Trump is not Hitler. It's not Germany. It's not 1933. It's an election. And things will change. But I think we need to take a very, very hard look at the Democratic Party and how it has failed to do anything for it, failed to even win elections, just to give up these state legislatures and let the Republicans carve up these gerrymander and carve up and make these safe districts and have no response whatsoever is should be very telling. And instead of just seeing them as life itself, it's time to take a hard look, past time to take a hard look at them, too.
And finally, to go to the question, for example, of what's happened over the last 8 years or over the last 24 years, going back to Africa and on the question of internet building international solidarity, which people saw as an essential element of liberation in the 60s, and even outside of the struggle for black liberation in the United States, the larger working class movement knew that in the 20s and 30s, and that those were the people that got prosecuted for talking about it. The condition of Africa has changed under the Obama administration drastically. The killing of Gaddafi allowed essentially the taking over of the militaries there by AFRICOM. That should be one of the demands, would be to liberate Africa from control by the U.S. government. And you would think that now that Trump is the commander-in-chief, that that would make it easier. And since he ran saying no more regime change, et cetera, you might stick those words down his throat and try to force the issue.
Well, yes, I think so. What the United States has done to Somalia is a crime going on for years that has destroyed this that nation, which was not allowed to emerge from years of war, an ongoing war with Ethiopia. That can be a demand. We didn't say anything when Obama continued that policy. So put Trump on notice. Well, you said you were there was going to be no regime change and under your administration. So let's start with Somalia. America needs to stop waging war against Somalia. And, you know, things are changing, fast changing in Syria and other places. The Syrians are making gains against the terrorists, many of whom are backed by the United States. And this is something to applaud and to decouple ourselves from U.S. foreign policy, which happened under Obama, and we signed on to things that progressives said they did not want. So this is an opportunity to, as you say, to force Trump to make good on things he said he was going to do during his campaign. And even if he meant it, there'll be pressures on him not to do it. That's one of the reasons the ruling classes were all behind Hillary Clinton. Both parties are the war party. And black people should never be supporters of a war party ever again.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com entitled Freedom Rider. This week's column, Black Fear in the Age of Trump. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.